Welcome to the Living a Naturally Healthy Life podcast with Delaine ND, the podcast for people looking to correct chronic illnesses such as diabetes through lifestyle change. I'm Dr. Delaine Vaughn. As a physician, I see many patients who are ill because of lifestyle decisions such as food choices. Typically, diseases such as diabetes are managed with pills or injections. This approach creates a vicious, expensive, and unhealthy cycle of medication and then more medication to address the negative side effects. As a physician and a life coach, I work with clients to resolve their diseases, get off their medications, and live a naturally healthy life. If you don't like the healthcare system in America, I recommend you use less of it by being naturally healthy. So if you feel there has to be a better, more natural way to live a healthy life, you are in the right place.
Hello, and welcome back to the podcast. You are listening to the Living a Naturally Healthy Life with Delaine MD podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Delaine Vaughn, and this is podcast number 35. Thank you for joining me. I hope everybody is keeping themselves sane in the time of quarantine and social distancing. So the COVID outbreak is, of course, upon us. If you're listening to this in 2021, you can look back and kind of chuckle at how everything went down for COVID. But certainly we are doing everything we can right now to take precautions to kind of flatten that curve and keep us all safe. So for those of us who are still working on the front lines, still seeing people, seeing patients, seeing the public, that includes me. Stay safe, guys. Do the best you can. Keep your hands clean. Use PPE where available. It also, though, highlights the importance kind of living that naturally healthy life, making sure you don't have a ton of comorbidities floating around that can lead to these kind of diseases worsening. So yes, we are homeschooling four kids, 12 years old, 10 years old, and 9 years old. So that's been a new adventure for us, something we're not used to. But also we have a bunch of kids that have been cooped up in our home because they are also practicing social distancing. So if you hear kids screaming in the background or noises or, God forbid, some other crazy commotion, that is what's going on at my house. So it's kind of been exciting. I really think it's interesting, although COVID's very scary, and certainly there's a certain amount of anxiety that goes along with that. I think that there are a ton of kids out there who are going to look back on this experience and be like, man, the COVID outbreak was the most amazing thing. I got to be with my family the whole time. My parents weren't at work. They were at home with us and doing all these amazing things. And we were out and we were biking and we were playing basketball and there were board games. I think kids are going to look back on this and really have some fun memories, as scary as it's been for all of us adults out there. So I hope everybody's staying safe. I do want to share with you some of the results my clients are getting. I have a client. Her name is Claudette. We've been working together for about 5 weeks now. She has come off of her medications. Her blood sugars have normalized. She saw her doctor last week, and he, of course, took her off the medications that she had been on. So she's had a pretty substantial weight loss, about 15 pounds in the last 5 weeks. So she's just seen some really wonderful results, and I'm really proud of her and the effort that she's putting in and how good she's feeling and that she's happy with her results. So I just wanted to share these results with you because the things that I promote in this podcast are the things that you need to do to reverse your type 2 diabetes. And that's nothing would make me happier than having a world without any type 2 diabetes. So that's why I put this information out there, because I really want everybody to be able to have this for themselves if that's what they want. So today we are going to talk about planning, and not really planning. It's more the journaling, the food journaling. Part of that does include planning, but it's more the keeping a record of what you're eating and what you're doing. So recognize why this is important. This is important for a variety of reasons, but the way that I use it with my clients is, one, so that we have data so that we can analyze to make changes that we need. So that data, you know, we can compare what we've eaten to what our blood sugars did, to whether we stayed in ketosis, to what's happening with our weight, to all of these different things. If you're not recording it, you don't really have that data. You're kind of making a guess off of a memory that you have, and our brains just don't remember things that well. So we write it down. We write a journal. We write a log. I actually have a form. I'm going to talk about the form here in a minute, but I send it out to all my clients. One of my other clients has actually developed that, and she was kind enough to let me have it and really share it with all my clients. So I use a log that everybody fills out. All my clients, they fill them out, and we can have this data so that we can analyze the information and make the changes where we need to. There's also an element of accountability that goes along with the journaling. Not an accountability to me. Yes, my clients all send me their logs. Yes, I look at all of them. Yes, I review them. Mostly I'm looking at their blood sugars and then what they ate and then comparing the two. I'm not really adding up or double checking their addition of their carbohydrates. I do like to see if they're in ketosis. I'm looking at those things, that information though. So if I see that you ate something really carby and I can look at the carbohydrates, or if I see something new that I'm like, oh, I wonder what's in that, I'll look at the macronutrient recordings of those foods. But I usually am not adding them up or saying, oh, you need to increase your fat or increase or decrease your carbohydrates. I'm really looking at the results. What are you getting with your ketones? What are you getting with your blood sugars? It's more that you have accountability to yourself. That you said you were going to eat this and that you did or didn't eat that. That you said you were going to watch your blood sugars and you either did or did not do it. If something happens and it was unexpected, you have the ability to go back and look at why it didn't happen the way you expected it to. So that accountability component is important, but not accountability to me. It's accountability to you. The other thing is that when you have this written plan, it becomes more real. It becomes something you can go back and review. What did I say I was going to eat? What did I say? How much of that did I say I was going to have? Did I say I was going to have fruit today, or did I just think about it? If you wrote it down, it's really there. And then you just go by what you've written down. So the other part of journaling, why journaling is important, is for planning, learning how to plan your food. You're not going to know what to plan for tomorrow if you don't look back at yesterday, today, 3 weeks ago, and see what you were doing and had success with, right? If you know that you can have chicken salad and some fruit every day and your blood sugars look good and you stay in ketosis, great. Typically, that fruit's going to be something along the lines of berries, blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, blackberries, those kinds of things. Some people, though, will handle more fruit than others. Their bodies tolerate it better than others. You're not going to have that information unless you've recorded it and able to make those comparisons. So you need to know what you can plan for, right? The other thing is, if you make a plan, you're far more likely to do what serves your body versus just waiting until you show up at the office and be like, oh, I'm going to eat something for lunch. And then somebody brings pizza in, or somebody brings donuts in, or somebody's birthday and there's cupcakes. Whatever that looks like, you're going to do a lot better in eating foods that serve your body if you've made a plan for it. It's also the opportunity to say, it's Monday. I know that somebody's birthday is on Thursday, so I'm going to make sure that I'm eating super clean throughout the week because I know I'm going to want to enjoy some of the fruit that comes at that birthday, or I'm going to want to have something special like fruit or a piece of chocolate or whatever that looks like. You're not going to have that information if you're not making a plan. You're not going to be able to account for that, to allow for that, to make decisions that support that goal unless you're making a plan for it. So that's the other really important part about journaling. Lastly, journaling is really important so you learn what you need to do. Initially, doing the journaling can be tedious and time-consuming, although most of my clients tell me it's really not nearly as hard as they thought it was going to be. But I think there is a certain amount of time that goes into those plans, to making those plans, to figuring out the macronutrients, to deciding when you want to eat, to deciding what works for you, to measuring your ketones, all of that stuff. There's a certain amount of time that goes into that. But once you know what you eat that serves your body all the time, then you've learned the things that you need to do most of the time. Then it's not having to put so much time into every day. It's just putting time into those days that aren't part of what you usually do. So all of those things are really why journaling is important. You need to have the data to analyze. You need to have an element of accountability to yourself. You need to be able to plan, and you need to have this information so that you can learn how to eat in a way that keeps you living that naturally healthy life. The components of that log, I'm going to go through those now. It seems long and daunting. Bear with me. It's not as bad as it seems. Not all of my clients do every part of this, okay? Some of my clients do some of it. Some of them do all of it. Some of these you hopefully have already been doing as a diabetic. The big components are time, when. So there's a column on this form that is for time. It's the time you take your meds, it's the time you take your blood sugar, it's the time you eat your meals. All of these different times will be recorded. The next component is a blood sugar reading. That's the next column. And of course, again, I want the time that you took your blood sugar written in there, recognizing that I always have my clients look at their 2-hour after meal, what we call in the medical community a 2-hour postprandial. This is fine for my type 2 diabetics that are on oral medications, But certainly the type 1 or type 2 diabetics that are on insulin, sometimes they struggle with this because they have been told to take their blood sugar before they eat, the preprandial. And the reason that doctors have done that in the past is because you're going to take your baseline insulin your insulin that you inject, your whatever is planned. And then if you're already starting out high and you're counting carbohydrate points, you're going to take an additional amount of insulin on top of that. And they only want you giving a minimal number of shots. And that makes sense. In my medical practice, I do not manage diabetes like that. I encourage people to eat foods that serve their body. And then you only have to take that after your mealtime blood sugar so that you can see how that food kind of affected your blood sugar. So that's what I encourage my clients to do also. Again, if you're cleaning up your diet and you're not eating carbohydrates, especially processed carbohydrates, there's no need to add that correction dose of insulin in. So, time, blood sugar reading. Some of my clients monitor what we call a hunger scale. How hungry were they before they started eating? How hungry were they after? How full were they after they started eating? I have a column where my clients can write down the medications they've taken. I have a column where they write down the food that they've eaten. I have three columns for the macronutrient breakdown, the fats, the proteins, and the carbohydrates. I have a column for them to record their ketones and whether they're in ketosis or not. Again, not all my clients do nutritional ketosis, so the measurement of macronutrients, the measurement of ketones is not nearly as important. I also have an area where they can write their weight, where they can record how much water they drank, where they can record how much caffeine that they've taken in the day. And then it's also really important for my clients to measure how much sleep they've gotten. All of those things, caffeine, sleep, all of those two things primarily increase the amount of epinephrine you have in your system. So they can cause your blood sugars to rise. So if you're not getting enough sleep, you're going to have more epinephrine, more cortisol, more stress in your body and physiologically happening in your body. If you're drinking two pots of coffee in a day, you're going to have more caffeine in your system, and that is going to cause you to have releasing more epinephrine too. So we watch all of those things. All of these different things are things that we can adjust and tweak out to help your blood sugars normalize. When you think of it that way, that's kind of exciting. It's not just that I need to change what I eat. There's all sorts of things in this work, in reversing my type 2 diabetes, all sorts of components that go into that that I can adjust and make little changes to get really big results from. So we can use this information to make a plan and also to compare the information to make our plans better. So making and executing a plan versus eating foods that make you sick, right? And what this comes back down to is eating from that prefrontal cortex, making a plan from that prefrontal cortex versus eating based on what our primitive brain wants to do. When we eat from that, when we make a plan and eat from that prefrontal cortex's plan, those foods are typically going to serve us. We weigh pros and cons with the prefrontal cortex, and we make decisions based on bigger goals versus eating from that primitive brain. Remember, that primitive brain wants to seek out pleasure, avoid pain, and expend the least amount of energy possible. So if there are donuts in the break room, the prefrontal cortex is always going to choose that. It's never going to say, why don't we go ahead and drive to the store and get some meat and veggies and eat that because it's long from work. It doesn't feel as good and I've got to expend all this energy, right? That's not usually what your primitive brain is going to decide to do. But if you're making decisions from that prefrontal cortex, then you're going to be making the decision to have the foods that serve your body. You're also taking that time to plan. And when you bring the food that serves your body, it's certainly a lot easier to eat that food at work that serves your body versus the donuts on the break room table. So the other part of this that's really important and how to use this information is you compare your meals to your blood sugars or to your ketones. Or if you've normalized all that, you compare what you've eaten to the weight that you're currently at and how much you want to lose, and then you can make adjustments on that. This all depends on which goal you're working on. A lot of my clients, when they start with me, they really want to normalize their blood sugars, and that makes total sense. That's all they're really interested in. Of course, as they start to normalize their blood sugars, their weights start to drop quickly. And they also realize, oh, it's a lot easier to lose weight when I don't have all this insulin in my system making me sick. But initially, my clients are watching their blood sugars very closely. And then those who are doing nutritional ketosis, they're monitoring the ketones also. But once they normalize their blood sugars and their docs take them off their meds, they really want to work on their weight. They want to lose some more weight. Again, it's very easy initially as you're coming off of insulin insulin, or as you're not stimulating your pancreas to make all this insulin in your system. When that insulin level drops very low, it's very, very easy to start losing weight. But once you've kind of plateaued out in that area and you don't have that kind of easy weight loss that comes just from not having so much insulin in your system, then you really start needing to take that information in your log, in your food logs, and looking at what do I need to do differently? When I eat this much nuts, when I eat cheese like this, when I overeat, when I get really too full, then I notice the scale doesn't move or it even goes up. Okay, I need to do that differently. So depending on what your goal is, you're going to need this information so you can make a better plan on how to get to your goal. And then you make changes for your plan for tomorrow using the information from today, right? So you can determine what causes your blood sugar to jump up or what causes you to go out of ketosis. I had one client text me on a Saturday afternoon, very, very worried because they had gone out of ketosis. And I had reviewed their log and seen that they had eaten pineapple the night before. Some people tolerate pineapple okay. Many, many people, though, they find it to be too carby and too sugary. And that causes them to go out of ketosis and it causes their blood sugar to jump up. He did not notice it in his blood sugar, but the next day he totally went out of ketosis. And why? Well, it was because of the pineapple. I was able to quickly look and say, yeah, it was because of that pineapple you ate. Now you know. No need to worry. You'll go back into ketosis. But from here on out, you need to recognize when you eat pineapple, you're going to probably go out of ketosis. So you use the data on your log to determine how the food choices that you made are affecting these things. Ketosis, blood sugar. And then certainly after you normalize all that stuff, you use it to determine how it's affecting your weight. And then you make an informed decision about what serves your body for tomorrow. So here's the deal. When I was diabetic, when I was gestationally diabetic, I was having to monitor my blood sugars. It was a very complicated pregnancy. And I did a whole lot of eating to buffer my worry about my pregnancy, my frustration about being on bed rest from 14 weeks, the fact that I couldn't clean my house adequately, all sorts of things. I used food to buffer all of those thoughts and emotions that were pretty cruddy at the time. So even though I was diabetic, I was still out eating things like pizza and Chinese food. And the interesting thing that I saw, I was still monitoring my blood sugars and sometimes they would be high and sometimes they would be low. But here is the interesting thing. I noticed that when I ate pizza that my blood sugar was fine. I don't know if it was because there was enough fat and meat in the cheese that it kind of buffered the carbohydrate jump. But I'll tell you, I grew up in Chicago. We do not eat thin crust pizza. There's no cracker crusted pizza that I will ever eat. We don't do that. We have thick, thick pizza, and that's the way I like it. So I wasn't skimping on the flour, that's for sure. But I would notice that when I would eat the pizza, my blood sugars did fine. But then I would eat something like Chinese food with the rice in it. That would cause my sugars to skyrocket. It did not make sense to me. Those seem equivalently bad, right? Like they are equally bad things for a diabetic to eat. But what I noticed is that the blood sugars would jump with the Chinese food, less so with the pizza. So I would have never known that if I wasn't watching my blood sugars very carefully and comparing it to what I eat, right? So that's what you have to do. How are your body going to handle fruits, grapes, apples, bananas versus berries? You don't know until you look at it, right? Again, if you're doing nutritional ketosis, most people will say you cannot stay in ketosis and eat those kinds of fruits, the grapes, the apples, the oranges, the bananas. However, some people will find they can stay in ketosis with more carbohydrates than other people. And you're not going to know that unless you're comparing that information with the foods that you're eating. You can make informed decisions then about what really serves your body if you're looking at all this data. So the last reason that I really love for my clients to keep their food journals and keep these logs and really keep them nicely organized so they have all this information at their fingertips. No point in collecting this data if you're not going to keep it organized enough to where you can use it. But when you bring this to a doctor's appointment, your doctor will love this. As a doctor, I love it when my patients are making good decisions. I love it when my patients are invested in their health. This shows your doctor that you're super invested in what you're doing. You bring these food logs to your doctor's appointments and you show them, look, this is what my blood sugars are doing. They look great. I've been skipping these meds here and there because I'm worried it's going to go down. What do you think? that doctor is going to tell you, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Look at all this change that you've made. We can totally take you off this med, and I can trust that you're going to be watching your blood sugars closely enough that if there's a problem, you're going to call me and we can get you back on it if we need to. Doctors are going to love that. Not only does your doctor love that, but then you get to go in and you get to feel like the star student, right? You're the A plus pupil. You're the good patient, the patient that does what needs to be done to live that naturally healthy life. And that's really what your docs want. That's what most doctors want, is for you to be healthy. And this is evidence that you're making the changes you need to be healthy. So try these things out, you know, write all this down into a log, into column logs for you, and keep this information for yourself. Recognize that when we start limiting what we can eat, and I'm not saying like we're depriving ourselves, but when we start making a plan from that prefrontal cortex and not really eating from that primitive brain, that's when the thoughts that maybe have driven you to eat in a way that doesn't serve your body start to kind of bubble up. That's when we start to see them. That's when we realize maybe the donut that we were eating every morning, or the cookies that we were eating at work every morning, or the M&Ms in my case that I was eating at work every morning. What was going on there is there was frustration that I was experiencing at work, or there was frustration that I experienced on the car ride to work, or I was worried about a patient at work, or I was worried about the job I was doing. Whatever it is, when you stop eating to buffer those feelings away, suddenly you figure out what your thought is, what your feelings are that maybe really aren't serving your health. That's what we work on in coaching. Certainly, I review all of my clients' logs. I keep a close eye on them. I look at all of that stuff. But recognize the thoughts about why you're not choosing to take care of yourself, the thoughts about why you've chosen to eat cake, a second piece, or even a third piece at a birthday party, even though you know you're a diabetic and your doctor has told you to stop doing it. The thoughts that drive those actions, those are the things we work on in coaching. If you think that's really where your work is and this is something that can benefit you, please send an email to Delaine@DelaineMD.com. Let's set up a time for a free consult and see what you really have available to you that can really change your life for the better here. Also, I want to let you guys know, because we're in the time of COVID, I'm going to be doing some Facebook Lives in the next 30 days, and I'm also going to be doing some presentations online. It'll be through Zoom. It's very easy. I know a lot more people are familiar with Zoom now and online meeting platforms than maybe they were before COVID. So I'm going to be doing some of those in the next 4 weeks to try to really help people understand, recognizing that if you want to diminish your risk of being negatively impacted by these kind of outbreaks. I realize we don't have COVID outbreaks all the time, but recognize it doesn't matter whether it's COVID. It could be influenza. It could be some other cold virus. If you aren't taking care of yourself and really living that naturally healthy life and maximizing your health, if you have all these other comorbidities, diabetes, hypertension, dyslipidemia, heart disease, those all put you at a higher risk to have a much more negative impact from these diseases. And living that naturally healthy life, COVID really has spotlighted why that is so important. So if you're interested in that kind of information, keep an eye out on my Facebook page, on my website, on social media, on like things like Instagram. I'll be making announcements about when those will be. So, all right, I hope everybody stays safe out there, social distance. Keep your hands clean. Don't touch your face. All of that jazz. Stay safe out there. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to send me a message and ask. I'm happy to help out in any way I can. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe and share with your friends and family. Also, leave me a review. If you want to resolve your diabetes naturally without any pills or injections, I can help you. Visit DelaineMD.com for more information. Click on the Work With Me tab, send me a message, and we can set up a mini coaching session. You guys have a great week. I'll talk to you soon.